Pittsburgh to southern Utah, the post team had heard transcripts of the flight transmission between the Phantom and Topeka Central. For the most part, it was dull, except for the final moments before the pilot crashed. The pilot had said, "Something's wrong! Something's wrong!" And then a moment later, "My rubber air hose is dissolving! Must be the vibration! It's just disintegrating to dust!" Perhaps 10 seconds after that, a weak, fading voice said, "Everything made of rubber in the cockpit's dissolving!" There were no further transmissions. "There's the wreck," somebody said, "up ahead." The wreckage of the Phantom was scattered over 2 square miles of desert. Standing next to the charred remnants of the left wing, Manchek could barely see the others on the horizon near the right wing. Everywhere he looked, there were bits of twisted metal, blackened, paint peeling. As the sun faded, he found himself standing near the remains of the tail section, where the metal still radiated heat from the smoldering fire. Half buried in the sand, he saw a bit of bone. He picked it up and realized with horror that it was human. Long and broken, and charred at one end, it had obviously come from an arm or a leg. But it was oddly clean. There was no flesh remaining, only smooth bone. It was late in the evening when a biochemist came up to talk with him. "You know," the biochemist said, "it's funny. That transcript about the rubber in the cockpit dissolving?"
"How do you mean?"
"Well, no rubber was used in this airplane. It was all synthetic plastic compound, newly developed by Ancro. They're quite proud of it. It's a polymer that has some of the same characteristics as human tissue. Very flexible. Lots of applications." Manchek said,
"You think vibrations could have caused the disintegration?"
"No," the man said. "There are thousands of Phantoms flying around the world. They all have this plastic. None of them has ever had this trouble." Slowly, the wildfire installation settled into a routine, a rhythm of work in the underground chambers of a laboratory where there was no night or day, morning or afternoon. The men slept when they were tired, awoke when they were refreshed, and carried on their work in a number of different areas. Burton stood in the room that housed the spectrometer, along with several other pieces of equipment for radioactivity assays, ratio density, photometry, thermocoupling analysis, and preparation for X-ray crystallography. The spectrometer employed in Level 5 was the standard Whittington Model K5. Essentially, it consisted of a vaporizer, a prism, and a recording screen. The material to be tested was set in the vaporizer and burned. The light from its burning then passed through the prism, where it was broken down to a spectrum that was projected onto a recording screen. Since different elements gave off different wavelengths of light as they burned, it was possible to analyze the chemical makeup of a substance by analyzing the spectrum of light produced. Burton placed the first chip from the black rock onto the vaporizer and pressed the button. There was a single bright burst of intensely hot light. He turned away, avoiding the brightness, and then he put the second chip onto the lamp. Already he knew the computer was analyzing the light from the first chip. In another room, Levitt was carefully feeding similar chips into a different machine, an amino acid analyzer. Amino acids were the building blocks of protein. There were 24 known amino acids, each composed of a half dozen molecules of carbon, hydrogen, oxygen, and nitrogen. Proteins were made by stringing these amino acids together in a line, like a freight train. The order of stringing determined the nature of the protein. It was a shot in the dark, this machine.